Pumps and Systems Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Champlin, managing editor of Pumps and Systems Magazine. We recently wrote on how pumps were used in the Thai cave rescue, an 18-day ordeal that captured worldwide attention and culminated on July 10, 2018, with the rescue of 12 junior soccer players and a coach. Here we will speak with Dominic Fry of Engineered Software on how pumps were used in the rescue and the role engineers played. For our story, which is on pumpsandsystems.com and will be in the September 2018 issue, we spoke with Xylem CEO Patrick Decker. Xylem is a customer of Engineered Software. The presenting sponsor of this podcast is Vaughn Chopper Pumps. The Vaughn Chopper Pump is a centrifugal pump with the unique ability of chopping all incoming solids prior to pumping. Visit them at chopperpumps.com. Dominic works for longtime Pumps and Systems columnist Ray Hardy at Engineered Software and has filled in for Ray at times, including a March 2018 column on how to avoid oversizing your pumps. Dominic, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Drew?
Fantastic. First off, for our listeners, why don't you just tell us about yourself. How long have you been with Engineered Software and just your career path?
Okay. Well, I've only been with Engineered Software for a couple years, but I started out in North Dakota in the oil field. So I was going around out there when the whole boom was happening and the boom towns were sprouting up all over the place. And I was essentially going out to the well sites and running software and simulations and, you know, planning the cement jobs that we'd be pumping out there and the fracturing jobs that everybody's heard so much about. So it was a lot of dealing with pumps in very extreme situations where we'd have, you know, maybe like 10 or 20 semi-trucks out there that just had, you know, basically a motor and a pump on it. So we'd be dealing with, I work more in oil field barrels, which is 42 gallons per barrel, but we'd be pumping at, you know, 60 barrels a minute and, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7,000 PSI. So a lot of high pressure, high flow rate pumping out there.
Absolutely. And you've written some columns for us, filling in for Ray Hardy, who's a monthly columnist, a longtime contributor to Pumps and Systems Magazine. And at Engineered Software, what are you mostly doing over there?
So I help out with the sales staff and the engineering staff here, where we go around and, you know, I'll work with different customers. You know, this whole Thai cave rescue, our company works extensively with Xylem. I'll go to different trade shows and do different presentations. Some of the stuff, I suppose, I'll bring up here in a little bit.
Absolutely, and I'll see you at WEFTEC in New Orleans this year. Am I right?
You bet it. You betcha. Yep.
Good deal.
WEFTEC, AWWA, go around teaching different conferences for the Hydraulic Institute as well.
Sounds great. Well, yeah, let's talk about the Thai cave rescue, because it had so much, it had some worldwide attention when it happened about a month ago. You know, for those who are not aware, there were, it was a part of members of a junior soccer team. I believe it was 12 players and one coach just went into a cave. And then the next thing you know, they're trapped in it for several days as more water started to come in. And, you know, diligently, you know, pump companies, Thai Navy SEALs worked to get them out. So obviously Xylem had some engineers on site to aid in the rescue. And I talked with Patrick Decker, the CEO of Xylem, for a story that will be in the September magazine of Pumps and Systems, and it's already on pumpsandsystems.com. But Dominic, you know, you're an engineer. What are the engineering challenges when it comes to trying to make a rescue like this?
Well, you know, there's actually quite a fair amount of challenges. When people that aren't that familiar with pumps may see a story like this, you know, right off the bat you may say, well, why is Xylem sending engineers out here? All they're going to have to do is hook up some pumps, get the water out of there, you know, save the kids, everybody's happy, right? But in reality, it's not just a PR stunt. There's a lot of engineering that goes into what's happening, you know, behind the scenes on these pumps. It's a lot of engineering really that goes into pumping systems in general, right? That's what the whole magazine is based around. Now, you know, in this situation, like, we usually go around and preach about energy efficiency and how, you know, the Department of Energy is changing standards for pumps and motors and systems as a whole. But in this scenario, you know, it's kind of the exact opposite. Like, yeah, you're worried about energy efficiency, but part of it's because you've only got so much energy out there in the first place. This isn't just a factory floor where we can, you know, work on the transformers or call an electrician in if we need to get some more power somewhere. This is a remote place that's hard to get to. It doesn't have, you know, an easy access as far as bringing in pumps. It doesn't have easy access as far as bringing in more power. So, you know, just from the logistics standpoint, you've got a big issue right there from organizing everything. Now, on the pumping side, there's a totally different issue there, right? Where these kids got trapped in the cave essentially because the water was rising. So once they were in there, they went further into the cave. The water kept rising. They kept running further and further into the cave. So they eventually got, you know, miles back into this cave, and pumps are meant for, you know, as they're called, pump, for pumping, not for sucking water out in general. So when you're trying to get in there and run hoses, you know, deep into the cave and suck water out of there, it's going to be a difficult thing to do. You know, on the other hand, it was raining there, right? Or it's the rainy season, so as you're pulling water out of the cave, it's refilling. But on top of that, as that water level starts dropping, you actually start causing more, you start changing the net positive suction head requirements on those pumps and start changing everything around. So as that water level drops, you in essence have to lift the water higher up, which is going to cause more head on the pump. It's going to cause the pump to take more power. It's going to change where that pump is operating at on its pump curve. So you kind of think of it, you know, on the surface as a static scenario, but really as you're draining that cave, the operating conditions of that, of what that pump is seeing, is changing as well.
So we're looking at a distance of the rescue where the kids and the coach were 4,000 meters deep. How difficult is it to get these pumps in there?
Well, yeah, and you're never going to have, you know, the ideal pump to scuba dive in with in general. You know, there's a few very specific made pumps for that per se, but, you know, it's not something that you're going to find off the shelf. Now, you know, we're talking about scuba divers here that have, you know, big air tanks on their back. I'm an avid scuba diver myself, and you think about just moving around in the water or trying to move around in a cave in a scuba suit while you've got all this gear on top of you, and on top of that, you've actually got a weight belt when you're scuba diving as well to try to keep you the right amount of buoyancy. So these scuba divers have to try to get into the cave, you know, manage their way to get multiple miles back there, and then on top of that, they have to bring extra air. They have to bring, you know, these heavy pumps. You know, a pump is not a light thing to manage. And then, you know, there's these different chambers in the cave as well. So I think one of the smaller, tighter spots, you know, it was less than half a meter tall, something like that. So you talk about trying to get your scuba suit and all your gear and your pump through some of these tighter spots where, you know, even if it was a dry kind of cave situation, you'd have to get on your hands and knees and crawl through it. You know, that's a tall order right there for starters. One of the Navy SEALs actually died in the operation, right? And that was just when they were trying to do a drop and, you know, stash enough air tanks far enough up. But, you know, any time that you get into a situation where you're scuba diving and you actually have to take off your equipment in order to squeeze through a tight space, you know, you're performing advanced scuba tactics right there. And, you know, yeah, there's very little room for error in case anything happens.
And now a word from our sponsor. When a flexible chopper pump solution is needed, a portable bypass trailer might just be the answer. The Vaughn portable bypass trailer units are heavy-duty trailers that provide unmatched reliability anywhere. Available with Vaughn's signature chopper pump and Triton screw pump, this unit can be used for tough solids reduction applications or low shear solids handling. Powered by diesel or electric drive motors, this trailer is ready for the toughest jobs in any location. Learn more at chopperpumps.com. That's chopperpumps.com. And now, back to the podcast with Dominic Fry. How heavy are these pumps? How heavy is the scuba gear as far as, you know, from what you can imagine in this type of situation?
Well, you know, the scuba gear, you're going to have, you know, maybe a 10-pound weight belt around your waist, maybe a little more than that. Kind of depends on the buoyancy, if it's saltwater, freshwater, and so forth. But then you're going to be having, you know, maybe another 25 pounds of gear on your back. And then, you know, these pumps are going to weigh anywhere from 50 to 150 pounds, depending what you're looking at, right? And it's purely just because that's about as heavy of a pump as you're going to be able to carry underwater between one or two people. So, yeah, it's a difficult thing to do.
How often is the ideal pump used in most applications here? And what is the ideal pump for this type of situation?
Oh man, that's a tough question, Drew. You know, as an engineer, it's kind of interesting, right? Because when you work for an engineering company and you're speccing pumps, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to run the ragged edge. You want to play it safe, right? You know, if you go into a situation, you spec a pump, and down the road you find out that maybe there were more twists and turns and T's and fittings, or, you know, a different valve had been used, you know, all of a sudden you're going to have different characteristics of that system. So in general, people are going to be speccing pumps that are more than necessary for the system. And part of that is a CYA thing for the engineers. But then, you know, I used to do it too when I was an engineer, and I'd have a new person come in and work on a project for me. They probably went through and, you know, made sure that they specced everything out with a little room to spare. And then it'd come to me and I'd say, well, you know, let's play it a little safe, and I'll get, you know, I'll go one up just to make sure we're going to be able to cover ourselves in this situation as well. And that's on top of getting orders from the client, which are probably conservative right off the start. So when we're looking at things out there, it's actually really rare that the right pump is used for the right situation. And it's not always just because of the, you know, the engineering or people that, you know, somebody didn't know what they were doing. It's that, you know, we design things as a static situation, but that's not how things work in real life, right? These pumps are in service for years and years many times. So if we put a pump into service and then, you know, the economy does well and we want to then upgrade or add in a different line or a different process, or on the flip side, if something changes and we find a more efficient way to use our equipment, then those pumps, the system, or the, you know, the service that they're going to be seeing is changing. Now, the crazy part about that is working with the Hydraulic Institute a lot, they have a couple fantastic programs out there about pump system assessments and things like that. But some of their literature dictates that if you're as little as 10% off from the best efficiency point, you can be dropping your mean time between failure of that pump in about half. So if I'm not sure how savvy all the readers are, but if people are familiar with what's called the Behringer curve, which essentially looks at pump failures and where that pump is operating at on its curve, you can see that, you know, there's a host of issues that happen if you're, you know, and it's not just running your pump to the right of the best efficiency point, or running your pump without enough back pressure and just, you know, as much flow as possible. But also, if you're choking that pump back and it's not putting out enough flow, then we can actually see a fair amount of failures there as well, in particular in your bearings and seals.
And when Dominic mentioned the Hydraulic Institute, this is now the opportunity to say that Pumps and Systems has a training partnership with HI, and you can find that link under the resources tab at pumpsandsystems.com. And Dominic mentioned CYA. What he meant there, but probably didn't want to say on the recording, was CYA means cover your ass, but here he goes into more detail.
Oh, well, you just don't want the customer to ever come back on you and say you didn't specify a pump that was going to be big enough or, you know, strong enough to handle what you wanted. And oftentimes people that aren't too familiar with pumps just, you know, you think the bigger the better, right? Now, that can be a lack of many things, you know. So I went to school as a mechanical engineer, and we learned about hydraulics and calculating horsepower and, you know, friction loss and the basics, essentially. but there really never was very much that went into pumps, pump operating points, reading pump curves. So when I graduated and first went to work, I was given manuals to our pumps, to our trucks, and that kind of stuff. And they said, well, you better get to know these. And I was actually quizzed by my engineering manager. And part of it comes down to, you know, they'd ask, well, do you know how to read a pump curve? And I could say, well, yeah, I know how to read a pump curve. I can tell you that at this amount of pressure, this amount of head, it's going to put out this amount of flow rate. But past that, they never really went into oversizing pumps or effects on reliability. And so much of this stuff, you know, it's just not something that's taught in schools, and it's something that's kind of passed down. But if you're working, as a lot of people are, in younger offices these days with a lot of the knowledge and kind of older talent retiring, it's a tough thing to pass on and get these skills passed on to the younger generation.
So back to and thanks for explaining that, Dominic, but back to the pump rescue or the Todd Cave rescue. So, you know, imagine a handful of pumps are sitting at the entrance of the cave, and there's hoses that are going up to a kilometer into the cave. And the way that the Xylem engineers were able to help was to increase the flow rate by 40%. The officials obviously thought that they had a good flow rate, but, you know, the Xylem engineers were able to increase it by 40%. How did they do that?
Well, yeah, that's one of those things where, you know, first you got to convince people that there is a problem, right? And that's kind of something that we see in, you know, every day. If it's not broke, don't fix it, right? And here the consequences obviously were very high in case anything was, you know, miscalculated or wrong. But when they started digging into it, yeah, they only had, you know, five pumps at the entrance of the cave at the very beginning. And when you're running that kind of hose into the cave, there's a lot of room as far as, you know, getting leaks of water out of the hose. There's a lot of room for error if water gets into the hose, right? So if air gets into there and then gets sucked into the intake of the pump, you really got to watch out because you don't want your pump to cavitate for starters, right? So if you've got too little pressure at the inlet, you can just have cavitation from the pressure dropping below the vapor pressure of the fluid. But the other issue is if you actually have air entrained in the fluid, then that air is going to go into the pump, and that's going to drastically decrease the efficiency of that pump because it's just not going to be able to push the fluid out like you need to. And it doesn't matter whether it's a centrifugal pump or a positive displacement pump there. You get air into your pump, you're going to have a tough time getting it out potentially. So the first issue is really looking at that, you know, the amount of suction that we were able to get into the pumps, making sure that there wouldn't be any air in there, and then trying to get those pumps operating at as efficiently as possible, right? So one thing that's actually pretty amazing that they were able to do is the Thai SEALs were actually able to set up a little base about 700 meters, you know, roughly half a mile inside the cave. And so they actually ran electric line 700 meters into the cave, and they got a pump set up in there. And so now you're not just looking at pumps at the entrance of the cave kind of sucking water out of there, but now we're actually looking at some pump right in there at the source pushing water and starting to actually feed those other pumps. So now we're trying to get those pumps, you know, in essence, to work together rather than just putting everything at the entrance of the cave and trying to suck it out. So that really was one of the best things that they were able to do as far as getting the pumps to work in series and work more efficiently with each other. Now, the other thing that, you know, you can really look at is if, you know, you're sucking or pumping through, say, a mile's worth of hose, depending on the size of that hose, you can have a fair amount of friction pressure just from the fluid moving through that hose. Another thing that you can do as far as trying to figure something out is since you've got multiple different kind of chambers inside that cave, if they were able to get one pump, say, in between two of the chambers and just suck from one chamber and dump it out to another chamber, now all of a sudden you're actually able to get rid of all that friction from going through the hose and just have it dump from one chamber to the other. And then that way you kind of break up that friction from the hose and allow the pump to put more of its effort or energy into actually pumping.
If I remember right, there are four chambers in this, and how it was, I think at the beginning, chamber one, this is how Patrick Decker described it. Chamber one was muddy but clear. This was on Friday before his team was able to get in there. Chamber two, that's about a few hundred meters in. That had water that was knee high. Chamber three was the U-shaped in a tight space, and it was full of water. And then chamber four, at the end of where the boys were located, it was a kilometer in length and also full of water. So after they were able to help increase the flow rate by 40% and get some of the water out there, as they were going through that scenario, eventually it was a deal where chambers one and two were pretty clear. Chamber three was muddy and passable, and then chamber four was lowered down to the shoulder level of an adult, but still pretty high for children. And what Patrick Decker said was that, the next scenario would have been they had some handheld submersible pumps that they got there just in time. So obviously the submersible pumps, can you imagine that? How would those handheld submersible pumps have worked if they had to go that route, Dominic? Were they a little bit lighter, kind of compare them to maybe what was already there?
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. Is like we were kind of talking about earlier, you're not going to have an easy time getting any pump, 4 kilometers into a cave, especially normal pumps. So those ones are going to be heavier and harder to move. So as they got those handheld submersibles, fortunately they were able to get the boys out before they needed them. But had they been in there for any longer, since those pumps were able to show up on location, they would have actually been able to get those all the way back into chamber four, ideally start pumping that chamber four down. And you say that, yeah, it has water that's up to your shoulders. And so as a person over here just hearing about the story, you may say, well, that seems like something I'd be able to get out of. Why did they have to have two Navy SEALs guiding each, boy out through the chamber and everything? But at the same time, it's really hard to think about what they're actually going through over there. So, you can imagine being stuck in a cave for a week without, really having any water, any food. I wouldn't even want to be locked in a storage unit for an hour, much less a cave where, it's one of those things where the boys were becoming emaciated and weaker, and so if it hadn't worked at that point, they really would have had to pump that water down further in order to continue with the rescue operation.
All right, so how can piping software help pump experts prepare for emergencies?
Well, in a situation like this, it's really looking at the situation and trying to be able to determine or understand how everything's working together and how to best use those resources, right? So, it's crazy to me that these days you can walk into your home and ask Alexa or Siri or whatever you use to tell you the score of the baseball game or, look up the weather or whatever you want, but the people are still going to go back and try to use Microsoft Excel to determine some of these old engineering problems, where these days with the piping software, we can build a model like this in just a couple minutes, and then from there we can start running through the different scenarios. So I can say, okay, I've got, these different types of pumps, and I got this kind of piping that's available. So in this scenario, we would probably input the known piping, but then say, how are we going to hook these pumps up? And so if I've got dissimilar pumps, which, it's not a recommendation ever or generally to put different kinds of pumps in parallel for sure, but you can actually physically see what's going to happen if you use, pump A and B or pump A and C or C and D. And so you can actually play around with these different combinations of pumps and see exactly how much power you're going to be using. If you've got a power limitation, you can see where these pumps are going to be operating on their curve. So you can make sure that the pump's going to be operating close to the best efficiency point. So you're not only using your electricity as efficiently as possible, but also trying to extend that life of the pump. And then in each different scenario, we can see exactly how much fluid we're going to be pumping out of the system. And then especially in a scenario like this, we can say, okay, well, maybe at the beginning, while we've got a full chamber one, we should be operating with, you know, pumps A and B, because that's how we're going to get the most flow rate out, versus maybe a little bit down the road, as the chamber level drops, say, 5, 10, 15 feet, now you may actually want to switch it up, and you can see which pump combination is actually going to change around to give you the most amount of flow rate out. So for something like this, it actually allows you to really go in and investigate the different scenarios and try to figure out, you know, what's your best chance of lowering the water level is so you can save these kids.
Okay. Can you tell us more about how technical experts look at events like the Thai cave rescue?
Yeah, you know, as far as the technical experts go, they're really trying to see, you know, for starters, I think one of the main things was the power limitation, right? So they were really looking at what amount of power that they were going to be able to use out there. But they were also, going back to using the software, trying to look at the different scenarios or the different setups that were going to be able to give them the best chance of success. So that's where, you know, they start looking at different combinations of pumps in parallel, pumps in series, how you're going to set them up, how much, is it worth it to try to use a 4-inch suction pipe that's flexible, or is it worth it to swap it out and go with a 6-inch line per se? So it's also how do you utilize your resources most effectively?
Yeah, Dominic, that's some great insight on such a popular world event that just happened over the last month. But, you know, maybe for someone who doesn't know, have you seen anything similar? Maybe not, obviously not of the magnitude of the Thai cave rescue, but what kind of similar stuff could you compare this to that in your experience?
Yeah, you know, this isn't exactly unheard of to have a scenario like this where we're trying to pump a tank down or something similar, right? So one that I found that's actually very comparable, it was at a power plant site, right? And what ended up happening is they had this very large, it was about a 30-foot diameter tank, and it was filled up with water when it wasn't supposed to. And what they found out is there was a leak going into the tank. It was about 750 gallons a minute. And so you can kind of compare that to the Thai cave where you've got an influx of water coming in, whether it's from rain or surface water or whatnot. And they needed to get people in there, unlike the Thai cave rescue where they wanted to get them out, but they needed to get people in there to inspect it, see exactly where the leak was at, how much was coming in, how they were going to be able to fix it. But since it's a controlled industrial application, right, we've got a lot more safety features and, you know, protocol that you've got to go through. So in this scenario, we knew exactly, you know, how much water we were going to have to drain, what our starting point was going to be, and then the idea was to basically drain it down to about a 2-foot liquid level so that we'd be able to suck enough water out, but still have enough room to keep the hose and the suction in there and keep draining it out so that you'd have time to get people in and do their job. Now, it's very similar, right? Because at the beginning, you're going to have a kind of a portable-ish pump there. It's not going to be a giant pump that's meant to be in place for years and years. And you're going to be really concerned about having enough suction pressure, or NPSHA, at that pump. So initially, we're going to put that pump, and we're going to have a hose that goes off the pump suction into the tank. So that's going to be sucking the water out. And at first, it's not going to be very hard because the pump's going to be at about the same level as the water. Now, as you start draining that, though, all of a sudden, you know, a 28-foot, roughly, drop in water is going to cause a very big difference in what that pump's able to output. So the real issue is, at a certain point, are we not going to have enough suction, or are we going to cause that pump to cavitate? And if we get air into that pump, it's going to be awful hard to reprime the pump. So initially, when we were doing this, the team there was actually going ahead and doing a whole bunch of calculations in Excel and trying to figure it out, make sure they were going to be good. Except, you know, as anybody knows, it's kind of worked in the pump industry or in design and construction, what you put down on paper is seldom the case in the field exactly. So whereas on paper we were designing with smooth pipes and trying to figure out exactly how many bends and minimize everything, all of a sudden you get on site and you may have a different kind of pipe. Like in this scenario, we had kind of a corrugated pipe. So now it's trying to figure out how much extra friction are we going to have in that pipe due to, due to having those kind of edges that are wavy on the pipe, a couple extra bends and T's and everything. When you're really trying to push the line, some of these little things can actually have a major effect and be the difference between, a failure and a success. And so that's why it's kind of interesting to me where this is where we really got into. And I said, okay, well, this is easy. You know, we'll just throw this into Pipeflow. All of a sudden, we input the pipes on there. You go through the initial design as far as using the software, and it's pretty easy to do to figure out if we're going to be looking all right. And then as we kind of got into it and things started changing, we were able to just go in and change, say, the pipe size or type, change our friction factors accordingly. And it actually made it pretty easy to see that we were going to be okay. Although it was, it's always tricky, when you're dealing with making sure you've got an appropriate, management of change process and doing confined space entry. So, us in the industrial world, when we're dealing with situations, at least it's a lot easier for us to prepare as opposed to react, kind of like they were doing in Thailand.
Good deal. That's some great stuff. And I think that's a good way to end the podcast right here. Dominic Fry, thank you so much for your insight on all this.
Thank you.
And we'd like to thank Dominic Fry of Engineered Software for his time and expertise. We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor for the podcast, Vaughn. Please find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, CastBox. Subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. And you can find our podcast on pumpsandsystems.com/podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.